Well, up next with Gerald Celente, Matt Sevenar will get Matt's take on the incredible price of oil next on Coast to Coast AM. Matt Sevenar was born and raised in California. He received his undergraduate degree in political science from the University of California, Davis, and then received his law degree from the University of California at Hastings College of Law. He's a California licensed attorney. His work has been quoted extensively on the floor of the United States Congress. He's been featured prominently in the pages of Fortune magazine. His website, lifeafterthedoilcrash.net, is assigned reading at multiple university courses around the world. Here he is on Coast to Coast. Welcome back, Matthew. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, George?
Good. Gerald, Matt Sevenar.
Matt, I've been dying to hear you.
Matt, what have you been up to since the last time you were on? Almost a year and a half ago.
Yeah, well, I run my website's a full-time job. It gets 100,000 page views a day. I do, you know, news updates daily. Obviously, I'm biased, but I think it's probably some of the best news roundups, and maybe one of the best ones available on the internet.
So and you know, I've got opposite views than you do on some of these issues, but I think it's healthy to have you on because.
The problem with your view about abiotic oil, George, mm-hmm. I've explained this to you numerous times on the show in very clear and simple language, is that the only people who believe that are you and Jerome Corsi.
No, Thomas Gold did.
Thomas Gold was an astrophysicist. He never actually had to find and discover oil for a living. If you talk to anybody who
but he believed
to find,
it.
Wait, let me finish. You talk to anybody who has to find and discover oil, they consider your belief in abiotic oil. I don't mean any disrespect.
No, I know
but
that.
But they consider it like the tooth fairy. And it's a very dangerous piece of misinformation because it leads people to believe that this is all just some big scam and that there's plenty of oil because there's an oil fairy in the middle of the earth that is producing it. And look, there's 40,000 oil fields in the world. None of them show any signs of refilling. Okay, and last time I was on this show, I told you go to my site, scroll down all the way down, said there's a green chart of Eugene Island, and that's the field that all the abiotic people say, look, this is proof that it's refilling. And you can look and see very clearly that it's down 70% from its peak 25 years ago. And that's the one piece of evidence that the abiotic oil crowd, which honestly is like three or four people who come on this show and a handful of other shows and spread this piece of misinformation.
Now, let me ask you this, and then
your show is the primary vector for that piece of information because people email me. They say, I'm full of it. This is all a big scam because they heard of the abiotic oil.
Well, I shouldn't say you're full of it. You have your own views. Other people have their own, and that's supposed to be what this is all about. It's supposed to be about debate. And, you know, I agree with you on a point here that in this country today, you can't express your views without somebody else going crazy on how you feel. And there's something wrong with that. It needs to be changed. But I wanted to get into, Matt, your view on what the heck is going on with this, with the price of
oil.
Well,
it's very simple. Supply has plateaued since the year 2006, and net exports, which are the key factor for a country relying on imports like the U.S., those have actually been in decline for three straight years. So this is what the peak oil people have been saying for going on 50 years, is that once global supplies stop growing, you would see a 300 to 400% increase in the price. Well, what's happened in the last 3 to 4 years as supply has plateaued? You've seen a 300 to 400% increase. When I first came on this show 4.5 years ago, the price was $30.
Right.
It
right.
could be 150 by Monday morning.
Don't you think a lot of this has to do with the fears that Israel could attack Iran and then the oil supplies there could be shut down?
Well, yeah, absolutely. There is a geopolitical risk factor that's being factored into the price. But you have to ask yourself, why was that not being factored in, say, 1998 when it was $10 a barrel? Because what happened sometime between the late 90s and early 2000s, it became obvious to the powers that be that there was a lot less oil than what they thought there would be. So, for instance, you asked Gerald about the pipeline in Afghanistan. That pipeline was supposed to go out to the Caspian Sea, where they thought in 2001 that there was going to be 400 billion barrels of light sweet crude oil. It turned out when they started drilling in 2002, there was only 40 billion barrels of very low quality crude. So then of course within a few months we went into Iraq. So these oil wars are getting launched because the powers that be know that production is peaking. Dick Cheney was talking about it in speeches that you can get on my site or just do a Google search, you know, Dick Cheney peak oil 1999 speech, where he was talking about it back in the late 90s. So the geopolitical risk factors that are being factored in, those are sort of a downstream effect of supply constricting. If you could just go in Texas and drill and find tons of oil like they did 100 years ago, then the companies wouldn't be so desperate that they would need to go into places like Iraq and Nigeria that are extremely inhospitable.
What's this report of billions of barrels of oil in the West that they claimed that they...
Well, which report? Are you talking about the Bakken oil field?
Is that the name of it?
Well, okay.
This is the one near Montana in South Dakota in Wyoming.
The optimists are predicting that it might produce 200,000 barrels a day. That's 3 minutes of oil, given what global demand is.
What is global demand a day?
1,000 barrels a second. That's 42,000 gallons a second. That's 85 million barrels a day.
How many million a day?
85 million barrels a day. The reason I emphasize the amount of gallons per barrel is the average person has no idea what a barrel means. So the term 85 million barrels a day means nothing to them.
Right.
What was it, say, 10 years ago?
About 77 million barrels a day. Okay. So what happens is when you get... when you have a world where the demand is increasing by 3% per year, but you've got a finite... a commodity that for all intents and purposes is finite, and you've got demand growing at that rate, it's only a matter of time before you run into a supply crisis.
Now, let me ask you this one, and this is conjecture on your part, but at the current pace of worldwide usage of oil, when do you think we're going to run out?
But, George, it's not a matter of running out. We live in an economy based on expansion. Energy is the basis of all economic activity. So you need an expansion. You need energy supplies to grow in order for the physical economy to grow.
Sure.
But like I said just 5 minutes ago, supply has plateaued since 2006. The price has gone up 400%, but that has not resulted in an increase in either discoveries or production.
Yeah, this is what I'm confused about, though. If it's starting to slow down and diminish and we continue to use it worldwide at the rate we're using it, If peak oil is real, if you're correct, we got to be running out eventually, don't we?
Right, but see, George, it's not a matter of running out. Look, there are oil fields that were discovered 150 years ago. The first oil field that was the first commercially drilled oil well in the U.S. was drilled in 1859 in Pennsylvania. That oil well is still producing one or two barrels a day, or maybe even 1 or 2 gallons. I forget.
Boy, but that's not going to do much for us.
But my point is, it's not a matter of running out. That's obfuscation that's being put out by the oil.
Well, are you saying we're not going to run out?
George, it's a matter of when does supply hit an apex, okay? When does it go from going from 77 million barrels a day back 10 years ago, today it's 85 million barrels a day. What happens when it goes down to 80 million
Okay, but what creates that? What creates it to go down, to go backward?
Because you've got an oil field. Pretend you've got an oil field in your backyard. And there's 1,000 barrels in there. The first barrel you pull out is going to be really easy to pull out. But as it's just like picking fruit. Maybe that's a better example. The more fruit you pick on a tree, the higher up you have to go, the tougher it becomes to extract fruit from the tree. Same thing is basically true with an oil field, except that unlike a tree, you can't really regrow oil. Okay, so the more you extract, the harder it gets to extract.
I know, but that's what I'm asking you. If what you're saying is the more you extract, the slower it goes, it starts dropping down, you just gave me the numbers, is there going to be a point where that number becomes so low we're truly in a serious situation?
Well, what will happen, and this is probably within the next 50 years, is that there will be, for all intents and purposes, no energetically recoverable oil. Okay, so you hear a lot of people talk about capped wells. They'll say, well, there's a well that was capped, and it still had 50% of the oil that was in there. Well, usually what that means is that well, it was taking more energy to pull the oil out of the ground than the oil actually contained. So you would have to use $100 of oil to extract $50 of oil.
Well, let me ask you this. Regardless of what the usage will be worldwide 50 years from now, what is your estimate on the amount of millions of barrels it'll
There's about
be
a trillion barrels left in the ground.
How many? How much?
A trillion. We've consumed a trillion. There's about a trillion left.
On the entire planet?
Correct.
Matt, I keep hearing about the oil reserves in Iraq. What's the story with that?
The official estimate is 100 billion barrels, but it's quite possible that that estimate is an overestimate, because what happened back in the 1980s, all of the OPEC countries made what are called spurious revisions, where out of nowhere, they had all this new oil that they were reporting. The reason they did that is because Ronald Reagan, his primary goal to collapse the Soviet Union was to lower the price of oil so that the Soviet Union, which is one of the world's major oil exporters, they knew because of a 1977 CIA document that's now declassified, they knew that Soviet production would peak in 1987, and it did. And they knew that once that happened, if they could drop the price of oil by getting Saudi Arabia to flood the market, which they were able to do back then the Soviet Union would financially collapse. But the thing, in order for Saudi Arabia to do that, it had to report, or the way the OPEC nations have things set up, is you can only pump more oil if you say you have more in reserve. So out of nowhere, in the 1980s, all the OPEC countries, including Iraq, Iraq did in 1983, they reported massive increases in reserves, even though there were no significant discoveries.
I saw something move over the wire yesterday, and again, I don't know anything about this, that they said that Iraq had more oil than they even thought before in their reserves. So I don't, again...
It's possible, although I suspect that could also be a bit of propaganda, because you've got the different tribes there, Sunnis, Shiites, and the Kurds. And the Sunnis, there's not really much oil in their neck of the woods. So they want a strong federal government because they want a piece of the oil action from the other areas. So if they don't think that there's oil there, they're not going to have any hope. So it behooves us to, you know, that whether there's oil or not there, you see what I'm getting at?
Now tell me, what's your forecast for where do you think oil prices are going to go? You mentioned that you think, you know, possibly within a week. I mean, you didn't say you think, but it could be at 150. What is it, like 140?
Well, I'm saying that because it's 146 right now, and we've had days where it's jumped $11 in a day.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think what I said was it's conceivable on Monday morning
right.
It could be 150, which is a psychological barrier that, you know, nobody really expected to hit this fast, even pessimistic.
Where do you think it's going to go?
Well, is this going to continue skyrocketing upwards?
I mean, do you see any pullbacks in the near future?
There might be short-term pullbacks if we get a massive depression, which it looks like what we're going to. But even that might not be enough. You know, U.S. demand has decreased by 5% in the last year, and that, you know, hasn't done anything hasn't had any significant effect on the price. So, you know, there could be occasional pullbacks, but the general trend is upward, and I fear that we could be in some sort of final spiral at this point.
Matt, what about the Gull Island oil reserve? What's
the
situation there?
The only person who makes that claim is Lindsey Williams, and I read Lindsey's book. He has no documentation. There's no evidence. The only thing is him saying that some hyper-excited oil guy told him there's 200 years in Gull Island. I've looked everywhere, and I can't find a single piece of evidence for that. And I emailed Lindsey 5 times at his website. I said, look, I've got the most popular oil-related site on the Internet. You know, I want to know if what you're saying is true. I need some evidence to back it up. And if you have some of that evidence, I will post it on my site as soon as you present it. Never heard back from him.
What's your site?
LifeAfterTheOilCrash.net. Or you can also just go to peakoil.org.
One of the reasons, Matt, that I believe in the abiotic oil theory is that I just can't believe we had enough plants and dinosaurs that died in order to create this much oil that
we
have.
I think you're in denial, George.
No. Answer that question for me.
Oh, you mean about the plants and dinosaurs?
Yeah, and then how did it get down?
Hold on.
And then how did it get down so deep?
Well, Georgia, it had about 500 million years to be compressed, but all the plant matter had over 500 million years to be compressed down like that. So there was an awful long time. But here's the thing. You're going to need to get, if you want to answer that question, you're going to need to get a geologist on. Okay? What I can tell you, just go to read through my site, and I've got documentation up the yin-yang.
I look at your site all the time. You know
What's that?
I said I look at your site all the time.
Yeah. George, I've said it 1,000 times on your show, 40,000 oil fields and none of them are replenishing. So even if your theory is correct, it's not doing us any good in the real world, where 95% of the world's oil comes from 48 oil-producing nations. 33 of those nations are past peak.
All right, how about this for you to give me a little estimate? Since we've been pumping out oil out of this planet up until even today, how much of that oil would fill what? Would it fill up the city of New York? How much of it do you think we've taken out of this planet? You say we took out a trillion.
We've extracted a trillion barrels. That's 42 trillion gallons.
I mean, what does that look like in the scheme of things?
You know, that's a good question. I don't have an easy answer to that because the numbers are so huge, I can't come up with anything to help conceptualize
it. I mean, would it look like Lake Erie or smaller?
I honestly don't know because I don't have an analogy or something that to conceptualize. You know, I would have to go look how many gallons of water are in Lake Erie, and is it 42 trillion gallons? And if it is, then that would be a reasonable analogy. So, you know, if you gave me an hour to do some research, I could go figure out, well, how many gallons of water are in Lake Erie? Maybe use that as an analogy, or how many gallons of water are in the Mississippi River or whatever. But,
Matt, do you look at things such as the alternatives? You know, they do say that necessity is the mother of invention. And what, about 150 years ago, we were burning whale oil.
Right. Well, the problem with that is necessity is the mother of invention, but you need affordable energy to power that invention.
Well, for instance, you know, I'm talking about the things that really don't make the news, like hydrino power and charged clusters and
Real exotic stuff. Here's the thing. Whatever sources or basket of alternative energy somebody is interested in, I always tell them, look, whether it's this more exotic stuff like what you mentioned, or the more pedestrian stuff like solar, wind, geothermal, once the crisis hits, it's too late for a large-scale switchover, because any large-scale switchover is going to require smoothly functioning capital markets and affordable energy to power the transition. Okay, we don't have that anymore, and it's not going to get any better as oil goes gas goes to $10 or $15 a gallon, and the economy collapses and massive last-ditch wars break out. So it's this thing where whatever basket of energy somebody's interested in, I said those are totally great. I'm a huge advocate of them, and you know what? We should have been investing in them like madmen 30 years ago when Jimmy Carter was totally honest with us, but we didn't do it, and now we're in deep you-know-what, and I don't really see a way out of it without a reversion to a much simpler way of life. Now, we in this country, and I think this has something to do with petroleum culture, because petroleum culture tends to give rise to a mentality that miracles are always possible, because petroleum has produced, for all intents and purposes, a lot of miracles over the last 150 years. And people in our culture, they think that the good guys always get a second and even a third chance. And I hate to break it to people, but that's not how real life works. It maybe is how it works in Disneyland, but in real life, you generally get one shot to get something right. We had that one shot back in 1977, 1978, when Jimmy Carter addressed the nation, and like him or hate him, he was totally right on energy, and he addressed the nation and said, look, we've got to make some significant changes.
I hear what you're saying, but Jimmy Carter, I was in D.C. in the first energy crisis in 73, and Jimmy Carter talked the big game. He was in the nuclear business, and they invested the grand total of $500 million into alternative energies during the Carter year. So all these people, they all talk about it, but none of them do anything about it, because the powers are much greater than...
Well, right, exactly. You're right.
And we have this whole suburban culture, and we're a country without mass transportation. We all know that story as well.
We're going to be back. We're going to take phone calls with both of you and everyone else who calls in on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our Independence Night program for you, what an extravaganza. The fireworks begin here on Coast to Coast AM. So make sure you're part of our Friday into Saturday morning show live from St. Louis right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you with our guests this hour, Gerald Celente, of course, Matt Savinar, and we'll take your phone calls as well. Gerald, what's new for you? What do you do next?
What we're looking at now, and what Matt is talking about, we're calling this oil crisis an economic 9/11, and it's devastating the economy. It has so many different connections between everything that we do. we're going into a crash that's going to be worse than the Great Depression. And what we're just telling people to do is be prepared. Crime is going to increase.
Yes.
This is a time for economic as well as personal self-defense. Prepare for the worst. And in self-defense, by the way, that's what you do. And I do have a bit of experience in this field. I've been a martial artist for over 30 years and had my own school in close combat for a number of years. And self-defense is about preventing the worst from happening, not fighting. It's about not getting into the fight, knowing that's what's coming around the corner and taking measures to prevent it from going down as everybody else does go down, because as Matt pointed out, you know, people have this mentality that, you know, the good guy's going to win and you get a second and third chance, but in real life you don't. So this is the time, and as we're going through the 4th of July, to remember those things that did make this country great, and some of those things were called Yankee frugality. Use it up, wear it out, make it do without. Don't spend, and as Catherine was saying earlier about, you know, giving, not putting more into that corporate machine that they just send away from the community. So buy everything local, spend as little as you can, and really plan for the worst, because we think something is going to happen very shortly. And also, there's going to be a lot of scam artists out there, a lot of pyramid scams going on. Be weary about it.
Take advantage. And Matt, how about you? What are on your plans in the future?
Well, I'll keep running the site, you know, for as long as you know, the grid is up, and as long as I have the time and ability to do it. But I completely downscaled my life 5 years ago. I don't own a car. I live right next to the public transit system here, and I've started taking classes and everything from ancient living skills to gardening, all sorts of stuff. So, you know, the other thing, what he just said, I tell people, two things you can do is get in physical shape, because we're almost certainly all going to be performing a lot more physical labor. Mm-hmm. And right now, most Americans are in such bad physical condition that they blow out their knees the first 2 days. The things really go to heck. And then get to know your neighbors, because we're probably going to be a lot more reliant on our neighbors for survival than we have been in the last, you know, 80 years or 50, you know, 50 to 80 years in this country.
I want to see one of those air compressor cars that they're making in India. Have you seen that, Matt?
Yeah, I have. And guess what do you use to compress the air?
What do they use?
Electricity that's usually generated from coal or natural gas, both of which are also peaking. See, this is where we talk about basic energy literacy. And as financially illiterate as the average American is, that they're even more energy illiterate, which is why I constantly get emails about the air car. And I say, where does the energy come from to compress the air? You can't get something for nothing. But we live in a culture where everybody believes in a lot. Everybody has a sort of a lottery ticket, something for nothing mentality. Hence, things like the air car, you know, find their way into my inbox, you know, on a daily basis.
Well, that's why we can't do hydrogen yet, because we were using too much energy to produce it.
Well, that's one of the reasons, exactly. But by the way, a reader emailed me during the break. You asked about Lake Erie.
Yes.
The analogy, he says, and he's emailed me a lot of times before, generally a very reliable person, says Lake Erie's got a trillion gallons of water in it. So if we consume 40 trillion gallons of oil, that would be the equivalent to almost 42.
That's amazing.
42 Lake Erie's.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go to the phones. First-time caller, Alan, you're on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Alan.
Hi, George. How are you doing tonight?
Good, thanks.
Okay, I'd like to ask Gerald, do we have troops in Saudi Arabia protecting their other countries from invading them?
Well, I mean, we have troops throughout the whole, you know, the entire Middle East. I mean, how many aircraft fleets are there? But I believe that they've pulled out a number of troops out of Saudi Arabia in order to quell some of the blowback that was happening there from having U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia. But the U.S. military force in the Middle East is gigantic, and they just keep moving new aircraft carrier bases aircraft carrier.
We may have some training personnel in Saudi Arabia, but most, if not all, our troops are gone.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Next up, let's go to west of the Rockies. Mike in California, you're on with us. Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, George, this is Mike. I'm down here in Southern California. I agree with you. I don't think so many dinosaurs died to make so much oil. I just think it's a big corporation because right here in California, we have four different types of oil they make. One for summer, spring, fall, and they make so much oil, and then when that oil runs out, they jack up the prices. We've seen it years and after years and after years. So I just can't see so many dinosaurs, millions and billions of dinosaurs dying to make this oil. So I kind of agree with you.
Well, Matt, now we have three of us.
Yeah, George, well, here's the thing. This should tell you how effective the psychological operation is functioning, and that even somebody like yourself and even a lot of your listeners who I happen to think are generally much more intelligent than the average person out there, they've all fallen for this psyop. It's not from dead dinosaurs. Anybody can tell you that. It's from all the organic plant matter. It takes 500 million years to compress down. And I've said this once. I've said it a dozen times. I'll say it yet again. 40,000 oil fields. None of them are showing any signs
of it. Well, how about this? Could you believe that? Because we may not be that far off. I just don't believe it comes from dinosaurs and plants. Could you believe that it's part of the planet, that it was a natural forming part of the planet, and it is running out?
Well, you could, in theory, believe in the abiotic theory, but then still believe that if it's not producing it fast enough, then for all intents and purposes, it's on a human time scale, it's a finite commodity. Let's say you believe in the abiotic theory,
right,
but you say the Earth is only producing 1 million barrels a year. That would be 42 million gallons a year, which is a lot of oil. Well, the world consumes 30 billion barrels. That's more 30 billion barrels per year. I don't even know how to put that into gallons because I can't do the math on the air. You know, so even if you want to believe that, it would be expanding on a geologic time scale, but not on a human time scale. So that's why I always say, show me the oil. I don't care about the abiotic oil or whatever theory you want to throw out there. The question is, are there any oil fields that are showing signs of replenishing on a human time scale? And the answer is no. And I said it again on the first half, I'll say it again. 95% of the world's oil comes from 48 oil-producing nations. 33 of those nations are past peak. The U.S. peaked in 1971, and the U.S. biggest oil-producing province was Texas. It peaked in 1971. They went on a drilling frenzy from 1971 to 1980. The number of drilling rigs went up by a factor of 14, and they still couldn't stop the decline. So they threw all the money and all the technology they could find at the problem and still could not stop the decline. So if there were wells that were replenishing, they would have found them, and then that company would have announced that to the public, and their stock price would have gone through the ceiling.
Matt, two things. Number one, I see this fellow on TV lately saying that it cost the oil companies about $20 or $30 to pull it out of the ground, and that's their profit. I don't know if that's true or not. That's their cost, rather. Is that accurate?
Well, I've seen estimates ranging all the way from $1 all the way up to $70 on what the lifting costs.
Well, what's your being in
the... You know, honestly, I don't know what exactly it is, because all I can do is go to the quote-unquote experts or the company documents and whatnot, and the depending on who you ask, it ranges from $1 or $5 all the way up to $70 or $80.
All right, so if we cut that in half and let's say we said 40, and it still seems like a lot of profit in there.
Well, actually, the oil companies, their profits are only about, on average, 10% of what their expenditures are. So if you're an oil company and you spend $100, you make $10. That's actually the ratio is actually one of the smallest ratios of any big business. If you look at home builders
how can they get these profits like $39 billion?
Because the volume is so huge. See, this is where people, they mistake volume for proportion. So if I invest $1 trillion, you know, a tenth of a trillion is whatever a tenth of that is. If I've got a $1 trillion industry
And my I expend $1 trillion to make 10% of that.
100 billion.
Okay, then my profits are going to be 100 billion, but right. I'm only making 10% on my investment.
Now, the other question is, I keep hearing a lot of things about...
Actually, before you ask that, let me finish what I was just saying.
Sure.
Okay, here's the thing. Most of the oil executives are paid in stock options. And the size of the stock option is based primarily not on the price of oil, but on how much oil the company reports in reserve. For example, Exxon, as you know, you've no doubt heard, had record profits. But in the last quarter, they had record profits. Their stock price dropped. Now, why did their stock price drop? Do you know? Because they declined. They reported a 6% decline in production. And anytime a company reports a decline in production, the investors start thinking, oh, wow, we better go jump ship to some other company that says everything is hunky-dory. This is one of the reasons why I suspect that some of the OPEC countries can't come clean, that they have overreported reserves, because then the investors and the company, you know, the investors will pull their money out of there and go to Nigeria or Russia or whoever that says everything is going to be hunky-dory.
All right, now, the other day, talking about drilling off the Florida coast, what's your take on that?
Florida and California off those coasts combined have something like 15 billion barrels. That would put the peak back by 7.5 billion barrels, or about 4 months. ANWR has optimistically 15 billion barrels. So even if you add off the coast of California, off the coast of Florida, and ANWR, you add all that together, you get 30 billion barrels. That the peak usually coincides at the halfway point, so it'd buy us an extra, basically a current rates of demand, an extra 6 months. I think we should drill in those places just so all the people who are saying, oh, once we drill in ANWR and off the coast of Florida, the problem will go away. I say, let's just go drill there, and then people won't have this psychological crutch to hang on to.
And what about the oil reserves, the releasing oil reserves?
There's something like 700 million barrels in there. It's only designed to be the equivalent, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, what you're referring to in Louisiana, that's only designed to replace a certain percentage of imports for a few months. I forget the exact number, but it's a sort of thing where Bush not too long ago got criticized for adding to the Strategic Petroleum Reserve as oil prices were high. And I think, you know, I have completely detest him, but that was the one thing I think he's done that's right, is add to that reserve, because you know, we're going to have, you know, we're looking at a net export crisis where we're not going to be able to import oil for a whole variety of reasons. And so adding to the strategic reserve is like adding to your savings account. It's like a smart thing to do while you can still do it.
Now, I've also heard that the United States, and I don't know if this is true or not, that the United States exports oil.
There is some, because of the way the global nature, the way the shipping lanes are. There are, in some cases, where you might have oil, say, in Alaska that gets shipped to Japan.
Yeah.
But it's a globalized economy, and it's a global commodity, just like food and everything else is these.
And they were making more money doing it that way, weren't they, Matt?
What the exact profit on BP or whoever was running the fields in Alaska, shipping it to Japan instead of to here, I don't know. But the thing is even if they let's say the president or Congress or whoever said you've got to only sell that to Americans, that wouldn't affect the price. It would just affect the shipping lanes. The shipping lanes would just be reoriented into less efficient ways of getting the oil to wherever it's being delivered to.
Maybe we should sell food for the same price as oil.
Well, there's a problem with that in that most of the oil-producing countries are also very poor.
Yeah.
So if you jack up like what you mentioned in the first hour, well, why don't we, if the price of oil is going to go up, why don't we raise the price of food? Problem is then you get riots and complete social breakdown in places like, say, Saudi Arabia.
Well, we may get that here if the things keep going the way they are.
Well, we are. See, this is a problem. This is why I don't think that these problems are so complex and of such a magnitude. I don't think they're amenable to large-scale solutions, because you go, okay, well, why don't we raise the price of food? And you think that's a good idea. Well, all that does is then serves to destabilize the countries that are still exporting oil, like Mexico. Mexico is going into decline. This is why I think KBR is building those massive detention camps, because they said, we're building these massive, they got a $400 million contract from Homeland Security to build massive new detention camps, quote, for an emergency influx of immigrants or other emergencies.
If OPEC said, we want the price of a barrel of oil to be $20, could they do that?
No, because they're basically max, they're at their max capacity for all intents and purposes. That's why You've got this emergency meeting over in Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia once actually would like the price of oil to come down because this is just creating all sorts of chaos. It's affecting their investments because they take the money they make from oil and they invest that in the U.S. stock market. So it's affecting them in that way. So it's 20 years ago when they had excess capacity, they could do that, and that is what they did. In conjunction with Reagan's strategy to collapse the Soviet Union, like I was talking about before, but they don't have any excess spare capacity anymore.
Why do I have this gut feeling, Gerald and Matt, that we're being duped by these people?
Well, you are being duped, but not for the reasons that you think. You're being duped to get you've been duped into thinking that this is all artificial scarcity. The reality is the oil companies, the automakers, General Motors, all these people have been promoting a view that of artificial abundance, that there's tons of oil. Exxon went on a multi-million-dollar ad campaign to discredit peak oil. Okay, so you've been duped, George. But it's not that you've been duped into believing artificial scarcity. You've been duped into believing into artificial abundance.
Let's take one or two more calls, and then we are done. East of the Rockies, Joe in Wisconsin. Real quickly, Joe.
Okay, George, I just wanted to back up part of your argument. I've got an article here from the Times dated January 18th, 08. World not running out of oil, experts say. It cites the Cambridge Energy Research Associates.
That's an oil industry-funded propaganda arm.
So you think that they're just telling us we're not running out of oil? For what reason?
Wait, say that because, like I said just 10 minutes ago, most of the oil executives are paid in stock, and that number one indicator of
what. Well, I'm not sure about that, Matt, because the chairman of Exxon, Rex Tillerson, got paid $5,700,000 in salary, not counting stock options, and his options were only a couple million dollars.
Right.
So.
Well, here's the other point, George. If they tell the truth, what are people going to do? What if they had told the truth 5 years ago? What would people have done? They would have stopped buying SUVs. They would have stopped buying big homes. All the home builders and car makers would have gone out of business.
Right. Well, that's happening now, though.
Right, but it would happen. It would have happened with much greater velocity and ferocity if they had told the truth or if they came clean and told the truth right now.
This is another show, my friends. We've got to get everybody back again. Gerald, thank you for staying with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Matt, thanks. Way too short. We got to do more of this, and we've got to expand it a little more because this problem is not going to go away. For Karis Coburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, George Knapp, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.